A nuclear Iran is unthinkable, but it could happen. Hello and welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now, our guest for this segment is John Wolfstetter, senior fellow at both the Discovery Institute in Seattle and the Herb London Center in New York. John, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, always glad to be with you and your audience.
Sure. So give us an update on what happened earlier this week with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, coming and speaking before our Congress, and the President not coming and not wanting some people to even participate in that.
Well, what you had was a very crude display by the administration. It turns out that they had been given a heads up about the upcoming invitation. It was only an hour, but that's 60 minutes more than the Israeli Prime Minister had gotten 4 years ago while on an airplane coming over here to speak, and 44 years of American policy on how much territory Israel should surrender was undercut by an Obama proposal asking them to give back all the territories acquired in 67.
Hmm.
And against this backdrop, here he has Susan Rice, his national security advisor, saying that what Netanyahu is doing has been destructive of the of U.S.-Israeli relations, a very inflammatory, incendiary word, instead of trying to tamp things down. It had the effect, I think, of backfiring, because I think it embarrassed any number of Democrats to showing up. It also brought more attention to the speech than it otherwise might have gotten, although the major networks apparently didn't carry it.
Right. And Susan Rice told Charlie Rose, as you write in your blog, in fact, this one is called Israel of Rice and Men. She told Charlie Rose on PBS that the idea of Netanyahu coming to give an address to Congress injected a degree of partisanship, which is not only unfortunate, but destructive of the fabric of the relationship. Your comments?
Well, this is coming from an administration that has, and Netanyahu couldn't say anything about this today, that has forced Israel repeatedly to make unreciprocated concessions to the Palestinians and to Hamas, outed secret Israeli intelligence military plans, and a series of broken promises that each Israeli concession would be the last. And that last summer, the administration backed suspension of U.S. commercial flights into Israel during the Gaza war and suspended routine arms shipments late in the conflict to force Israel to terminate its efforts, although I think Israel might well have done so anyway. So these are profoundly unfriendly acts. He did mention the friendlier side of relations. The American military has very good relations with the Israelis, partly because it's two-way traffic. The Israeli intelligence and some equipment the Israelis make has saved countless American lives over the last decade or so since Israel became really a major industrial power. This is a situation where Susan Rice goes and makes a speech, and then she says, these are the things that we want. Gets cheers at the AIPAC audience, and then they're in stony silence, as she says, but it's not achievable. Obviously, if you can't get the deal you want, you get the deal they'll give you. And that is not the way anyone bargains, particularly with people like the Iranians. You have to be prepared. If you're going to bargain with them, you don't sit down unless you're prepared to do what Ronald Reagan did when in 1983 the Russians walked out. You stand your ground. If they walked out, you say, well, maybe they'll come back in a few years, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not prepared to walk out, you have almost no chance to get a good deal.
Hmm. Good. In fact, you quote Netanyahu as saying, America worries about its security. Israel worries about its survival.
Yes,
wow, what a great point.
Back yesterday, yes. And that was very important. I thought now on today's speech, I thought.
And by the way, this is being pre-recorded earlier. This will air later this week.
Yes,
no, that's all right. That's all right.
At his speech.
His March 3rd speech.
March 3rd speech.
Mm-hmm.
The Prime Minister was very, very clear, because he said, you don't kick the can down the road where you give them a road at the end of it to get what they were supposed to be trying to stop them from getting, a nuclear capability. You can't leave them with a vast nuclear infrastructure. If you take that away, said it's like you can have a Formula One race car driver. He doesn't have a race car drive. He doesn't drive, and a pilot can't fly a plane if you don't have one. And that you cannot have the road at the end being that they are getting a nuclear weapon. And I thought he was very smart in focusing on two things rather than having a list of five or six, which would be easy to break those down into the various components. The thing that he might have said, but again, he got the point across in the most important way, was that this totally destroys the non-proliferation treaties regime, which is based upon a right that Susan Rice totally messed up at AIPAC on March 2nd when she said that they have a right to peaceable use of nuclear energy. And the point is, but she conflated that with a right to enrich uranium. And there is no right to enrich in the NPT. What it is you can use enriched uranium to run a nuclear power plant or do a legitimate commercial non-military research. But you can get that enriched uranium supply. There's about 7 or 8 or 9 suppliers out there. There's Russia, United States, Canada, Britain does so, and others. And so this idea, there's no right to enrich. This has never been granted. And as Brett Stevens pointed out in a brilliant column on March 2nd, also on Monday, March 2nd, at AIPAC, this is a right the administration opposes giving our ally South Korea. And now they propose to give it to a state bent on our destruction.
Comment more about that bent on our destruction part. I mean, I don't think people realize how important that is. For years, America has been, according to Iran, the great Satan, and Israel is the little Satan. If they actually had the nukes, if Iran did, do you think they would use them against us? Do you think they would try and destroy Israel?
I think that it is likely that they will use them in some way. Now, if they're going to fire a nuclear weapon in the sense of aiming at cities, I think Israel is your most logical target. Mm-hmm. If they're going to fire at us, maybe they try a single shot that is a so-called electromagnetic pulse attack, which could short out our infrastructure in a worst case, our national grid. That one would be hard to trace because it would be very hard to figure out necessarily. The problem with a clandestine strike, if they transfer it to someone also, is it may not be traceable, so how do you retaliate? They wouldn't be the only suspect. And we don't have forensic signatures for a weapon that has never been exploded. And if they share designs with the North Korea designs and maybe some of the Pakistani designs, okay, from the same network, it may be very hard to figure it out. Mm. So I think he has done very well in getting across the risk.
He being Netanyahu?
Yes, Netanyahu did an excellent job in getting across the risks of it. The regime's founder, he quoted some things. He said, the Ayatollah Khomeini exhorted his followers, quote, to export the revolution throughout the world. It's not that these people don't mean this. And to say, well, we go by their actions and not words, what Susan Rice said, she obviously doesn't believe that they mean the things they say about us or about Israel. But, in the 30s, Adolf Hitler meant what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very important distinction that he drew, and he cited several things they said about destroying the United States, which and Israel, and pursuing the revolution. And that is something that the administration would rather refer to. He said, this is a wonderful paragraph. This is a couple of sentences from his March 3rd speech, Netanyahu.
Okay.
I'm standing here in Washington, D.C., and the difference is so stark. America's founding document promises life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Iran's founding document pledges death, tyranny, and the pursuit of jihad. And as states are collapsing across the Middle East, Iran is charging into the void to do just that. They've charged into four states, he points out, and this is what they're doing before they have a nuclear weapon. So what does he think they're going to do afterwards?
You know, one thing that during the height even of the Cold War, there was always the doctrine of MAD, mutually assured destruction. But that doesn't really work with when you're dealing with somebody like Iran in light of some of the theology, the kind of the apocalyptic theology of some of the mullahs, correct?
Well, I think that's true. This is what we're dealing with here is a regime whose personality doesn't really resemble that of the personalities of Kennedy and Khrushchev. Khrushchev was a gambler, but he wasn't looking to have an apocalyptic end to the world. The goal of the Soviet Union, and even Stalin, who was somewhat of a madman, said this. He said to around 1949 or so to Beadle Smith, who was at that time the ambassador to Russia, was also our first CIA director before that, he said, we don't want war any more than you do, but we are less interested in peace, and that is our advantage. And this is very different. This is a regime that has spoken in apocalyptic terms. Now, during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, Fidel Castro wanted Khrushchev to launch an all-out nuclear strike against America, and he was told by Moscow, well, you know what's going to happen to your island? It's going to disappear, and you with it. He still wanted the strike launched. He was a fanatical Marxist revolutionary. We have fanatics now who are religious fanatics, and that's we can't count on them behaving the way Khrushchev and Kennedy did, trying to pull back from the brink.
Yeah. Now, it seems also that one of the things that Iran wants is just time that they can keep fooling the inspectors or whatever and just keep working at it until they finally get the bomb.
That does seem to be the case, and this is what he is proposing to give them. And later on in his March 3rd speech, he says about
Netanyahu. Okay.
Netanyahu says about the Islamic, talking about the Iran and ISIS, the Islamic State. Mm-hmm. He said Iran and ISIS are competing for the crown of militant Islam. One calls itself the Islamic Republic, the other calls itself the Islamic State. Both want to impose a militant Islamic empire first on the region and then on the entire world. They just disagree among themselves who will be the ruler of that empire. In this deadly game of thrones, there is no place for America or for Israel, no peace for Christians, Jews, or Muslims who don't share the Islamist medieval creed, no rights for women, no freedom for anyone. So when it comes to Iran and ISIS, the enemy of your enemy is your enemy. It's a wonderful twist on that old sword.
Yeah.
You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, excellent.
And this is someone who, his eloquence is exactly, of course, what they feared.
You know, it's so strange. I mean, with all due respect to President Obama, I feel that Prime Minister Netanyahu is speaking the truth more than our own leader here in this context.
I'm sad to say, but I don't think there's any question. And part of it is Obama really doesn't get it.
Yeah.
I think that's he doesn't know a lot of this stuff. He has a leftist view of the world that is informed from very different sources.
Yes.
And he simply ignores anything that does not fit into his picture. And what he said here, again, he puts it very plainly. He said the first major concession that he talks about two major concessions. The first major
Who's the he you're referring to?
I'm sorry, Netanyahu.
Netanyahu, okay.
March 3rd, yes, speech.
Right.
The first major concession would leave Iran with a vast nuclear infrastructure, providing it with a short breakout time to the bomb. Breakout time is the time it takes to amass enough weapons-grade uranium or plutonium for a nuclear bomb. According to the deal, not a single nuclear facility would be demolished. Thousands of centrifuges used to enrich uranium would be left spinning. Thousands more would be temporarily disconnected but not destroyed. Because Iran's nuclear program would be left largely intact, Iran's breakout time would be very short, about a year by U.S. assessment, even shorter for Israel.
Wow.
And if they advance centrifuges, could further accelerate it. So he talks about that, and then he talks about the idea of a sunset, which is that they will eventually be legitimated. And that, of course, is something that also makes no sense whatsoever and is utterly unprecedented.
Hmm. Well, we're out of time now. Your blog site is letterfromthecapitol.com. And capital is T-O-L. Thank you, sir. Yes. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week, actually.